Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And as we enter this wonderful, I guess now we're not entering, we're in the middle of the month of July, but I'm happy to have my cold gone. So if I sound a little bit differently, this summer sinus business, I tell you, it has been a challenge. But we are back in the act, got great things for you today. Ken is all excited over getting ready to go golf.
Of course.
And
it was a good day when you golf.
We're having our FEG golf outing for the Lafayette office this week up on Thursday. So it's at the camping course, right, Angie?
At the camping course at Purdue this time.
So we try to spend as much time as we can with the families that we take care of, having fun as much as we do the other stuff. It doesn't, you know, life doesn't have to be all so serious, as my wife would remind me as many times as possible. We are going to have some good conversations though today. Angie has got an article that she wants to go over healthcare. What is your objective at the end of our conversation with healthcare on that article?
Well, it's the effect of the baby boomers and what they have on healthcare, and kind of where the healthcare movement is going, and what to kind of prepare for in the future.
And what will the people who are listening take away from that? What just thoughts?
Well, not only that, but it might explain what's happening instead of feeling so insignificant when you call your doctor's office and they say, well, we're going to send you a kit that's going to let you take your blood and tell us what's wrong with you instead of coming in.
It is a very different world. I will tell you, if you've not heard the word black swan, black swan event, if you've never heard of that before, the logic behind it is forever we thought that there were only white swans in the world. And seeing a white swan proves that there's a white swan, but the absence of not seeing a black swan doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And I'm willing to bet that one of the largest black swan events that's going to occur in our life is a reduction in cost in healthcare. I say that because we're Americans and we get stuff done. You know, when the three of us were kids, they told us, and Ken, you may not quite remember because it was early 70s, but they told us that we were going to run out of oil by 1980. And they weren't lying. It wasn't a joke. It was serious. It's just we figured out a way around it.
Right.
We found more oil, and now we've even found more oil. And when I look at our system today, the healthcare system as we see it today, Medicare, you know, it just can't work. And I think we will figure out a solution. So hopefully you'll give us some good answers out of that article that we can think about. We're going to talk about a family gifting money to their kids in their early years to be able to use in their 20s. I love that topic. We will get right to it. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll take a break and be right back.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
Welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And Angie is going to be our guest host for this topic. Here's what happens in the radio world. I have to do three things every week. One of them I'm okay at. One of them I guess I'm pretty good at. I've done radio for 20 years. And one of them I have no clue about. I have no clue how you're hearing this. Once I'm done recording it, Ken, this thing is out of my hands and gone.
It's called technology, right? Joe.
It's called who, not how. Right? I mean, I could probably figure it out if I didn't want to manage money and do financial planning and write newspaper articles. But I've got great people, and I'm just so appreciative that Ashley and Andy do their thing, and you know that this goes across the country to radio stations, and life is good. And Angie helps with the content. She tries to find things that are out there that pertain to your lives that we need to talk about. And undoubtedly, Healthcare is one of the largest budget items for our families when they go to retire. Most people don't think of this in their 20s, but your number one, when you go to retire, your number one line item budget will probably either be taxes or healthcare, not housing. Now, hopefully, as I said in the introduction, hopefully we figure out how to beat that a little bit. But go ahead and tell us what the article is and why you found it so interesting.
Well, I always stop and look at articles that say baby boomers. I don't know. I just think it's a funny name.
Even though we're technically not baby boomers.
We're not baby boomers.
Technically.
It's 1946 to 1964.
And we missed it by a couple of years.
Missed it by a couple of years. So I always stop and look at those articles because I know the average age of the family that we have here that are part of FEG. So what drew my attention to it was baby boomers and their effect on healthcare. But the opening line said that baby boomers coined the phrase, "We live fast and die young." But then it said, although many of them certainly lived fast, they're not dying young. So the whole article is about healthcare.
My friend Harry Dent used to say people go from cocaine to Rogaine.
Oh.
And, you know, it was one of his spotlight speeches. So tell me where the article came from again.
It was a Forbes article.
Okay.
And so it goes on to talk about, it gives some statistics. I always have to look at that. I mean, right now, people over 65 years old currently make up around 13% of the population.
That's true.
By 2030, it'll increase to 18%. So in other words, 40.2 million Americans over age 65 are going to double to around 80.
And this is a serious number, Ken. We went from, in 2000, I believe, healthcare was like 12% of the GDP cost when we looked at Medicare and some of the things, and we're above 20% today.
Wow.
So it's even though our GDP is much, much larger today than it was back in 2000, it is still a very large number.
Well, and the thing is it's, as that this number is going to be 80 million, it's obviously going to place some kind of a strain on our healthcare system.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what this article is about and kind of, leaning into what's going to happen in the future. How are we going to take care of these 80 million people? Because another statistic is that the largest group of registered nurses in America right now are in their 50s.
Yep.
So
Kendra, my youngest daughter is in nursing school, and we can attest to that. I mean, you walk around the hospitals and see where she's doing her clinicals, and as they call them, and those kind of things.
Is she one of the young ones in that group?
At 22, yes, she would be one of the
well,
young
yes,
ones.
Well, yes, yes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for that, Mrs. Obvious.
Well, so healthcare is going to kind of have a double whammy, and that is, you know, where around 80 million people are going to need greater healthcare, there's also going to be a shortage of the people who provide it. So we've got to start thinking ahead and thinking, what are we going to do about this?
So what are we going to do about this?
Well, we're kind of moving into the digital healthcare world. And that's what I was finding interesting. I was reading these articles on, doctors that use their smartphones in the office and kits that they can send you at home. I know there's a skin cancer screening test that they send you at home, and you can do all of that yourself, and then you send the results back, or you send in the information, they give you the results, they call you with that. Blood tests, blood work is all being done now through the mail. So
we're going to talk about HSAs in the next conversation that we have after the break, but I'll give you just a few things to kind of go along with this that you may not know about. E-Step Doctor and Company is a CPA firm in Muncie, Indiana, here in Anderson that we work with. And as they say, never offer to give CPAs free money, right? So they have an HSA account, which is called a health savings account, and they get deposited up to $2 a day into their HSA for doing things that are monitored on a Fitbit, right? So we'll go to Topgolf, Ken, and all of a sudden they're gone. I'm going, where's Lewis? Where's Ben? And they're gone, and they're off walking. Because they've got to get so many steps an hour and so many steps during 1 hour during the course of the day.
Oh, wow.
My friends in one of my mastermind group, one of them created this ring. I'm not a fan of having a lot of jewelry, so I have yet to buy it, but they're trying to persuade me. But it's $300 or $400 for the for this ring that goes on, and it looks like a wedding ring.
I've seen those.
And the guy that created it is just off the charts bright. I mean, I'm the dumb one in this group, so it's I like hanging out with people who are smarter than I am, and it monitors the sleep patterns, it monitors the amount of health, it gets the pulse that's in there somehow or another, it does the blood pressure. And it all feeds out to their iPhones, and my health freaks just track it, constantly and all over they are.
Would you want to track every little bit of information about you on a daily basis?
I don't know if I would.
I'm sure the doctors would.
Yes, they would like. I will tell you that I monitor when I have really, really good days, when I feel the most productive. I write down everything that I did the day before, the night before, and that morning.
So when I ate,
type of food I ate. Now that I'm on this keto thing.
Right.
There's not a lot of variety. though Barb's getting pretty good at cooking some of this stuff, and it's we're at about 40 pounds a piece now on this puppy for the course of the year. So keto kind of works, but it's just interesting to watch this. And speaking of Barb, she's got one of those CPAP machines, and I just found this out yesterday. Had no idea, because I kept looking at her, and every now and then she forgets to put it on, and she's doing a lot and she's doing a lot better, right? And I said, "Honey, when are they going to take it off?" And they go, "Well, they don't want to take it off, but they keep changing the amount of pressure, as we lose more weight and progress." And I'm going, "I didn't know you were going to the doctor to do that." And she goes, "Oh no, they do it electronically." So a doctor goes on to her CPAP machine every week and coordinates the amount of airflow and the amount of power that's coming out every week. And that, my friends, is called efficiency and called cost. And, that's reducing cost.
Yes.
And then she only has to go to see the head doc once every 6 months.
Yeah, through the NFL, we have, they're always trying to improve our benefits. And we have a thing called Teladoc. So you can get onto a video conferencing with a doctor. And if your kid has a cough or a cold or a sore throat, they can somehow diagnose you over the video chat and get a subscription right there.
It's an amazing world.
It is amazing, yes.
I remember when one of the neurologists here in town told me that he's got an iPad at home that's essentially, and he has to take care of patients in Elwood. And when you have a stroke, and Elwood's about a half an hour away, when you have a stroke, the first 30 minutes are critical. And so the nurse sets up the iPad, and he's able to look at him and diagnose him from the Anderson location or from his house. So amazing technology. Healthcare matters, folks. We probably spend a whole review when we do a family update talking about your healthcare, things that you can do and that need to do as you progress into the retirement time. Big conversation. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. We'll take a break and be right back. Welcome to Consider This program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you all along. Hey, guys, do you participate in the HSA?
I do.
I thought you did. Ken, do you have an HSA at work?
No, I don't. Through the NFL, we have almost something like an HSA where they establish an account where anything that I pay out of pocket, I can go back and expense it through the NFL. It's almost like an HSA account.
Like a flexible spending account? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I can't remember what they actually call it, but it has to be post-taxed payments.
Gotcha. Okay. So here's what the reason I'm bringing up HSAs is because, as we were talking about in healthcare in the last conversation, one of the strategies that people are using is funding HSAs and then not using it during their working years, so that when they retire, they can use it to help pay Medicare Part B premiums. They can use it to pay insurance care premiums. But there is some confusion that I'm hearing about them. And so one of the groups that I work with is Ed Slott. You will hear me talk about him every now and then. You can go to irahelp.com to get him. So our focus when we get together twice a year for 3 days is to discuss IRAs, inherited IRAs, beneficiaries, distribution strategies as they relate to IRAs. It's not really HSAs, but HSAs have become such a big thing that we want to talk about it. And so we created an article, kind of like a little checklist, if you will. So planning for health savings and distributions in 5 easy steps. So Angie, you ready? Here they go.
Okay.
Number 1, withdrawals can be taken at any time. There is no holding period like with Roth IRAs. The entire withdrawal, including any earnings, is tax-free as long as there's corresponding qualified medical expense, which is pretty much anything. The medical expense must be incurred by either the owner or his or her spouse or dependents. So not necessarily your adult age children, though, you know, with your daughter in college, she still counts as a dependent. Additionally, the medical expense does not need to occur in the same taxable years as the withdrawal. And I would have missed that on a pop quiz. When you look at 529, for instance, the expense is really supposed to be in the year that you're taking the money out, and you have to be able to prove that. It doesn't have to be there. The medical expense must simply occur before the withdrawal is made. So you can't take it out ahead of time to be able to fund a surgery or to do something like that. Number two, HSAs are owned by the individual. That means the balance carries over year to year. We talked about that as being able to use it even if you change jobs or health care coverage. If someone is no longer covered by a qualified high deductible health plan, and that's what you have to be able to have an HSA, they can still take distributions from their HSA. This includes individuals covered by Medicare. Again, I would have had to stop and think about that. So some of this stuff is helpful to be able to to have it a checklist. When you hear me talk about checklist manifesto and why we think checklists are so important, it's so you don't have to rethink, right? The brain is supposed to be for solving problems, not storing worthless data, right? And, you know, so I build checklists so that I don't have to worry about storing it. Number three, unlike flexible spending accounts or health reimbursement accounts, an individual does not need to substantiate a medical expense before the withdrawal. That means an individual does not have to provide receipts or other proof that a qualified medical expense has occurred before accessing the account. However, there's always that gotcha at the end, right? The individual should retain documentation in the event of an IRS audit. My experience, the bottom line is people put such little amount of money in HSAs relative to everything else that's going on in the world. I don't think an auditor is going to spend that much time auditing unless you're really a jerk. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I would strongly encourage if you get audited by an individual, a human who's in front of you, they are there because they believe they can get more money out of you than what their cost of their time is. I mean, that's kind of how they're judged, right? So the last thing you want to do is be rude to these people, right? They're doing a job. And fortunately, it doesn't happen as often as it used to, but it's one of those things we shouldn't have to tell people to be nice, but nobody wants to be in that room.
Right, of course.
You just don't. Four, HSAs are not subject to required minimum distribution rules, and there's no requirement that the monies be used on current medical expenses. That means that HSA funds can remain in the account over the life of the owner and be used to supplement Medicare coverage during retirement. We said that already. Finally, if an HSA account is passed to a spouse, the spouse beneficiary can continue to take withdrawals on the same tax-free basis. So if I had one and I died, Barb could use it. If a non-spouse beneficiary is named, the HSA ends of the date of death. Right? So you cannot pass it on to your kids. You cannot pass it on to grandkids. But you can indeed pass it on to your spouse, which is kind of a cool thing and not an RMD. So number five, and we always say this, know the rules, right? Know the rules. Some of this stuff seems simple. Sometimes people act with that act of it's easier to get forgiveness than it is permission, right? That's not true with the IRS. They have these computers, right? And almost everything is trackable to a degree, and it's going to continue to move there. If you don't know this, have you seen the Whole Foods in New York that has no people?
No.
Work there? Have you heard about this?
I don't know if it was the Whole Foods, but I've seen some little cafes, grab and go type things where you grab it, you walk out, and it has a scan code or a barcode on it, and
it
bills you.
Somehow or another, I mean, we already know this exists. I just don't know how well they're using it there. But you have a thing on your phone that pretty much identifies who Angie Kinzer is, attached to your credit card, right? And it could be the Apple Pay in your Galaxy case. I have no idea what they call it. But mine, it would be Apple Pay, right? But I'm sure Galaxy's got something like that.
Even though
they're behind, you know, I'm sure they will get there. We have to support our, you know, our things we like. But you walk in, you pick something up off the shelf, and you know when you go to Kroger, you have to run it across the scanner.
Yeah.
Here it knows that you have it. And you don't have to talk to anybody, I refuse to use scanners. I want to talk to people. I never go through drive-thrus at restaurants. I never go through drive-thrus at banks. I want people. So it bothers me, but that's the world we're moving to.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's, I mean, some of this stuff is just really going to get automated. So know the rules. The penalty for not following the rules is stiff. Not only does the entire distribution become subject to income tax, it also is subject to a 20% penalty.
Ooh.
The penalty is waived if the HSA owner is over 65 or older or disabled at the time of the distribution. However, it is still treated as taxable income. Distributions are reported to the account owner and the IRS using IRS Form 1099. So whenever you take money out, expect a 1099, and then your job is to tell your tax professional or yourself, if you do your own return, hey, I pulled this money out, but I used it for a qualified expense. It's not taxable.
I wonder if it has a time limit like an IRA does. If you pull it out, realize, this wasn't qualified, do you have an opportunity to put it back?
It is an outstanding question, and why would the answer be no? Because of rule number, I think it was inside of rule number one, you have to have the expense before you can pull the money out. Therefore,
gotcha.
You could never be wrong.
So you got to pay for the expense and then get reimbursed?
Right. Correct. So that, and that's really, really important as people, more and more people are starting to try to do this on their own and prepay for surgeries. Have somebody that makes almost six figures a year that was just in here the other day, a younger person that went to the hospital because he didn't have health insurance company, needed a surgery, and ended up paying 10% of the price.
Right.
And so he was going to pull money out of an HSA that he had from a previous employer, you know, to be able to put down the 10%. And fortunately, because we have a checklist, we can go, no, you can go negotiate the price. You got to have the surgery, and then you can give them the 10% or put the 10% back in. But great question, Angie. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. Joe Clark, Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer. Hope you're having an outstanding week. You got a question or comment, shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com or call 800-928-4001. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
We're happy to have you. I hope you're having an outstanding week and enjoying the middle of July on vacation season or whatever it is you're doing. One of the things that we get to do on the show is answer questions that you guys send in. So if you've got a question that you would like to hear us talk, simply email us, consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com. Or give us a call at 800-928-4001. Angie is a real person, and you actually get to talk to her if you call.
Yes.
She'll make sure your question gets in front of us, and we'll answer it even if we don't put it on the radio. So go ahead, Angie. What's the first question for this week?
Okay. If a couple in their mid-50s is unemployed, can they set up an IRA withdrawal using Rule 72, claim it as income, and then reinvest it into a Roth IRA?
So there's a lot of moving parts in that. Other than my football jersey was being number 72, Ken, do you have any idea what a 72 is?
No.
So it's called 72T, and I would strongly encourage you never to use one of these, right? It is a weapon in the IRS tax code that is used against people more than I see them. So pay attention to every word in the sentence, because if you miss one word, the penalty is a 10% penalty for the withdrawal all the way back to the beginning of when you withdrew. So 72T stands for substantially equal periodic payments unchanged for the greater of 5 years or 59 and a half. So if you're 52 and you're in your mid 50s, can you use a 72T? If you have an IRA or if you have a 401k, you can roll your 401k over into an IRA. All right, you're allowed to do that. And you can start taking income out over the course of your life. If you're 50, which is greater, 5 years or 59 and a half?
59 and a half.
59 and a half. So you can't stop this program for 9.5 years. It's hard to look out 9.5 years into the future, Ken, right?
Yep.
So people will start a 72T because it seems to be the answer of the day, but it may not be the answer for the journey. And we had a guy who came to see us in our Lafayette office who had started a 72T with a brokerage firm and had probably taken money out for 6 years by the time he got to see me. He was 59 and 3 months. Is that 59 and a half, Ken?
Nope.
No. And they are, believe me, they know about the 6 month thing. I mean, I know it seems totally unreasonable, but he had taken out income for 6 years paid the taxes on the income, but no penalty because he used 72T and decided to stop it at 56 and 3 months. That was his choice, not mine. We told him not to. He needed to take three more payments. He did not. And he got a 10% penalty all the way back for all of the 6 years.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this is nothing to mess with. So the first question is, can you do a 72T? And the answer is yes. The second question is, can they take that money and put it into a Roth IRA? The answer for that is no, because they're unemployed. The only way you can contribute to a Roth IRA is if you actually have earned income, right?
Right.
So, and a 72T is not, and money that's coming out of an IRA is not deemed earned income. So sorry about your luck on that one. Stay away from 72Ts. I've rarely seen one of those work out to somebody's benefit. I genuinely believe it's better to pay a 10% penalty on an early distribution for money you need in 1 year to see what happens over the next 12 months, especially in an environment like we have today with the lowest unemployment rate than we've had in, you know, truly since the 50s, some would say historically.
There was another part to that question. It was just too much all to read at once. But it says also, so I stopped there. Would this income be counted for using it as a basis for the Affordable Care Act to get health insurance and tax credit for the insurance?
It would count as income. So it does go on your, it's part of your adjusted gross income. So it goes on your tax return. So the answer is yes, it would work against them for affordable health care. Now, I will tell you, I am the least knowledgeable probably that in this room, I know you know more about it than I do, over how that works. I just know that it's one you need to be very, very careful of. But it was a fine question that they asked, that's for sure. All right, next one.
Okay, can I buy stock for my children with the intent of it being used from early childhood into their early 20s?
So this is an interesting question. So Ken, we've talked about gifting a lot of times. So how much can we gift a child if we wanted to?
$15,000.
$15,000. And because you're married?
30.
30. And if they were married?
60.
60. Hopefully somebody in their early childhood is not married, right?
Right.
But in theory, if you wanted to buy stock for your kids and put it in an account for them, you could put up to $30,000 a year into an account. Now, remember, there's two different types of stocks, right? There's stocks that pay dividends and there's stocks that don't. And sometimes stocks that never pay dividends suddenly start to. So you have to be aware of this because there's this cute little thing called the kiddie tax. And it seems to be a very unfair thing, but the kiddie tax says that your children are only allowed to have so much income per year that's not earned, or prior to 2018, or it was taxed at your rate, Ken, the parent's highest marginal tax rate. The IRS decided that wasn't steep enough. So now it's at trust rates.
Oh, wow.
So the highest tax rate, you know, you've got to make a married filing jointly around $600,000 this year to be at the 37% bracket. A trust tax rate is either $12,400 or $12,600. I mean, it's a very low number. Once you cross that, you are there. So I could, in theory, or Angie, we'll have you give $15,000 to Ava,
okay,
right? And we'll put it in an account. And if it didn't earn more than $2,500, it's a very low number of dividends or something of that nature. Just pay attention to what's called the kiddie tax if you're going to do this. But if it makes less than that, you're okay. You just got to file a tax return and pay the taxes on it. If you sell a bunch of stock because you don't want the company anymore or the market was volatile or you wanted to buy them a car or pay for education, remember that it's going to be taxed at those trust rates if you go above that $12,000 and change number. So you really want to be very, very careful inside of that. In the early 20s, can you use this? Because the kiddie tax is up to the point in time when they are not making at least half of their own sustainability. So, you know, if they're making $20,000 a year as an intern or something like that, where they're able to pay for, in theory, half their rent and half their food, you can get out of kiddie tax, right? It's not an issue. You get married, you get out of kiddie tax. But just because somebody moves out, it's kind of like FAFSA and the stuff for schools, doesn't mean that they're no longer part of that kiddie tax issue. So you really do need to be careful with how that works. But that goes up to right around age 23. And then you don't have to worry about the kiddie tax anymore.
Okay.
We use this a lot for graduate school programs. Because Ken, if you have a stock that has capital appreciation, long-term capital gain mm-hmm. in it, and you sell it, you're going to pay 20% to the federal government for right. taxes and 5% to the state of Indiana. Your daughter, on the other hand, graduating from a university, is probably not at that higher income level yet, right? So now she's going to go to grad school, and she may get paid a little bit of money from the university to do something, but not necessarily a lot of money. And now you can gift her those shares of stock that were in your name, so you didn't have to worry about kiddie tax along the way. She can sell them on her tax return and probably not have to endure a long-term capital gain or taxation on it. If you're under, if you're in the 12% bracket or under, there is no long-term capital gain. So it's really a great strategy to think about. I try to tell people to use three generations of tax returns if you can. I use my kids, I use my mom's, and I use my own. And just, you know, understand it takes a strategy. Hey, we'll take a break and be right back. Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
I'm Angie Kinzer.
And we are in the wrap-up stage here, Angie. So what was your favorite conversation today?
I kind of needed to know about the stocks for kids.
The stocks for kids?
Yes.
Ah, that's true. Angie has become a little flipper. And for those of you who don't know, that's somebody who buys real estate, fixes it up, and yes, she did the work on her own. Very, very proud of her. Did the work on her own and had a little bit of profit. And so why would you consider gifting money to a child now? What would make you do that?
Well, I still have a 17-year-old at home.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in that age range up to the 22, 23 mm-hmm. that you talked about. And I happen to know that the market's good right now, so maybe I could. I don't have a huge window for her, but maybe I could have the chance to.
But why wouldn't you put that in your own name for right now? Why would you? Why
because
would
she'll
we,
be in a lower tax bracket than I am.
Well,
for one thing, for the capital gains.
But if she's in a lower tax bracket, then what happens right now doesn't matter, and the. When you go put accounts, and Ava is a wonderful, wonderful young lady, so please don't take that as anything else. But I am not a huge fan of what's called UPMA and UGMA accounts, Uniform Gift to Minors Act and Uniform Transfers to Minor Act, because when kids reach age of majority, 18 most places, when they reach age 18, we have to send them a letter. And if I don't send them a letter, Ken, TD Ameritrade will send them a letter and said, by the way, this is your money now.
Right.
It no longer is your dad's. It is your money.
Now, that's scary, isn't it?
Everything we know about Ava today would be okay. That's fine. But everything I know about 31 years of it being in this industry, it's not always fine. Right there. You may have put it in with the best of intentions for college or, you know, buying a house or doing any of that. And she may liberate it to go to Jamaica. and you may or may not be okay with that, but I mean, that's the reality. So I would encourage you under the current tax code not to do that. I would tell you to keep the money in your account so that if we needed to make a sale or something in it, it would be at your tax bracket today, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen. You could put it even in a Roth account if you wanted to for you, because remember, you can always get your Roth contributions back out. So you could put money in a Roth IRA for you, and in 5 years, plan on pulling out what you contributed
mm-hmm.
and then gifting her that money, as we talked about in the $15,000 increments. Or you could gift her the stock that is appreciated at that point in time, and then she can sell it at her account. So remember, when you make a gift at death, what we would call a bequest, you get what's called a step up in basis. So if Angie bought the stock for $10 and it's now $100 a share, her basis was $10, so if she sold it, she would have to pay taxes on $90. On the other hand, if she died and Ava inherited it, she would get a step-up in basis, so she would pay taxes on none of that money if she sold it. If Angie gave her the stock during life, so Angie's still fogging up mirrors,
yes.
right? And she gave her the stock during life, and Ava sold it, her basis would be your basis, the $10 a share. She would pay capital gains tax on $90 a share, but there's a rule, right? There's a rule. If you're in the 12% tax bracket or below, remember, there is no capital gains tax, right?
So, what is the max money you can make for that 12%
so
tax
married
bracket.
Married filing jointly this year, it's almost 80 grand. It's about 79. And so you can make, because of the standard deduction for you and I being under 65, our standard deduction is 24,000. So you can make right at about $104,000, which is a good living for a lot of people in central Indiana. Ken laughs that I live in Anderson, Indiana, because he doesn't, but he doesn't understand the value that you get here for a dollar.
I've been there, believe me.
There are different parts of Anderson,
true,
and
so
I'm very proud of the city that I've come to call home, and been here since 1988. So it's I'm fine here, and it all works out. But $104,000 is the answer with the standard deduction. If you make more than that, you itemize it, and the capital gains rate actually changes depending on whether you're in the 22% bracket, which is the next step, or the 25% bracket or higher. So it's still preferential income regardless for capital gains and qualified dividends. What was your favorite conversation today, Ken?
I agree with Angie about the gifting to the kids on the stock.
I have two generous people on the show.
Yeah, my daughter's 19 and she's in the college, and three or four years she's going to be gone on her own, and she's got to start planning.
She's got to start planning, but you're talking about you gifting.
Well, I know that, but still, I was just figuring, do I need to gift her some stock to get going, to start young? And, so just always thinking.
Always thinking, strategize. It's always good to have a good strategy. I will definitely give you that. I think the fun one for me, I'd love to learn. Angie and I are very much into this Enneagram studies. That are going on, and if you're not familiar with that word, trust me, you will be. It's spiritual in nature. They think in terms of where it was created from, monks and Christianity, and some one even sect of the Muslim and Buddhist religions. But there are 9 different personality types, and as I learn more about me and more about others, I've finally figured out my favorite hobby is actually to learn. And I know that may sound weird, but that's my favorite hobby. I tend to do everything at 110% and I then stop and I move on to something else, and it baffles my friends, and I never really kind of caught it, but, my wife has certainly caught it. And as I read about some of the stuff about me and others like me, it's kind of like, oh, I guess that makes sense.
Well, you got to use that brain, use it or lose it.
I liked the conversation about the HSAs.
Yeah.
Even though I put money in and Barb pulls money out and I don't pay much attention to it, it's certainly become a major planning piece for people going into retirement. They have a fear of healthcare that we haven't always had a solution for. And, it's more and more as people retire, more and more people are able to use the HSAs and make sense of it. So a couple of those things and the points that we came out with that I didn't know, I really liked. And, number one, remember, you have to have the expense before you have to have the withdrawal. That's important. You can use it for qualified medical expenses. When you're over 65, there's no penalty, right? But it's taxable if it's not for medical expenses, which can even be Medicare premiums, right? Medicare Part B premiums. So this is good stuff in there to be able to pay attention to. The second thing in there, though, that surprised people, I think, is the 20% penalty if you take it out for not healthcare related issues, right? So if you're putting it in, it is designed for healthcare. Remember, with an HSA, the money goes in before you pay tax, and you never have to pay taxes on it or the earnings as long as it's used for healthcare. I like it. I also liked your article that you had, Angie, where we talked about the healthcare things that were going on.
Yeah.
So if you missed any part of that on the show, remember, you can always go to our podcast, Consider This Program, to download it and listen to it at your leisure, or go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. If you got a question or comment, shoot us an email. Consider This Program. Have an outstanding week.